afternoon. Welcome, everyone, to Renegade Radio. I am your host, Andy Lowe. As always, we are brought to you by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. You can find us at renegadeconcepts.com and, of course, check out the radio programming at renegaderadio.businessradiox.com and listen to our past archives. As always, we are talking to business professionals and business owners about how they are getting outside of some of the conventional norms and creating success either in their life or in their business through those mechanisms. And today, we're going to delve into some non-conventional thought as we visit with Deborah Pauley from Corporate Financial Solutions. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
Now, as I understand, as we were talking ahead of time, you told me that you started off a life as a CPA that did not do CPA work, or at least that you don't do CPA work now. I got to say, that's pretty non-conventional. So tell us a little bit about how does a CPA influence the financial markets of business without being involved in CPA work?
Well, the traditional CPA, prepares taxes for businesses and individuals, prepares audits, maybe actually does what's called write-up work, which is actually keeping the books and records of the company. And I started this business, 15 years ago, after being controller of a very large company here in town, and I felt that there was something missing in the marketplace to help entrepreneurs and other investors in managing their business. I have a great story that sort of reflects this. A few years back, I was sent to a company by a large bank in town. The company was in a bit of trouble. And I walked in, said hello, didn't really know the owner. We sat down, and in 20 minutes, we're covering a lot of issues within the business. And the owner actually said, I've been wanting to have this discussion with my CPA. And so I took a leap of faith that I might know this individual, and I said, who is it? He told me the guy's name, and I definitely know him. He's a very competent, very capable person. But what happens is a CPA is responsible for a lot of compliance work within a company, filing taxes, advising people on proper record keeping, performing audits. And a lot of times this compliance work does not really allow time for those types of discussions. So what happens is many times CPAs are working on what is urgent, not what's important. And what I like to do is work with owners and managers on the issues that are important to the success of the company.
So if we're thinking about it, I'm kind of using an analogy here. It's almost like driving down the highway, and a typical CPA is turn left, turn right, watch out for that dog in the street, whatever. But they're not actually able oftentimes, not because of their talents or skill sets, but because of their time, they're not able to do a lot of the trip and destination planning and some of the detailed look down the road. Is that right?
That is a fantastic analogy. Many times, a business obviously has its strategy. And sometimes a strategy gets a bit off course, and it needs maybe a mid-course correction. And a lot of times, having an outsider's view on that can help management implement the change that's necessary for that mid-course correction.
Now, I 100% agree with that outside perspective. I think that's hugely important. Let's talk about this, though. You mentioned in that story that you told, the business owner said he'd been wanting to have that conversation with his CPA. So there's a variety of questions I think of there, but let's start with the first one. Why do you feel that business owners at the onset feel first when there are problems in the business, they should turn to the CPA?
Well, I mean, a CPA is an extremely knowledgeable individual. And people tend to think they're their main financial advisor, and they certainly are the sort of go-to person in that financial area, just like their corporate attorney is the legal go-to person. And what you see in most businesses is there's not like the go-to strategic advisor. So people tend to look to either the CPA or the attorney sometimes when they're sitting back and they're looking at some of their issues, and you know, those are the two people they're first to share their problems with.
Now, do you think that's because they're already paying these guys and they're hesitant to go out and acquire another party to turn to for things like strategy? Or do you feel there's another reason that they tend to look there first?
Well, I think they are paying them, but they've also developed a relationship with them. So just as, you know, if you're having a problem in your life, you're going to share that only with your closest trusted advisor. And I find that for me to find assignments and meet new people is that I have to be effectively a trusted advisor to the trusted advisors in order to be referred into particular situations.
Okay, that's perfect, because that was going to be the next question I wanted to talk about. You know, obviously it's a very personal relationship thing when you start talking about business problems. And business owners, I mean, it's painful sometimes to talk about, right? And you don't want to talk about it with just anybody. It's almost like marital problems. Nobody wants to talk about those things, right? So they just kind of like, I'll figure it out.
That's exactly right. There's many times when I go into a situation where I have to always look beyond the whatever the stated problem is to what I think that maybe the true issue is within the company. And because a lot of times people don't really want to face it. And I think one of the things that I bring to the table, and it took me a little while to recognize this, is that I bring senior level experience. But also, as an individual working on my own, your problems are not going to be broadcast in the office, you know, with 100 people knowing that an individual is on an assignment at XYZ troubled company. So that's another thing. That's a lot of discretion and confidentiality in dealing with some of these issues.
So when you think about going in, you talked about the expertise you bring to the table. What are some of the big issues that are present in businesses that would make either them or one of their trusted advisors say, it's time to give Deborah a call?
Well, I've kind of narrowed it down. Obviously, people have issues because they've grown too fast, or maybe they're in decline. Or there's also management performance issues. Those are the sort of broad categories, obviously, of when someone would need help. Each one certainly is kind of unique in its own, you know, setting. But those are the three broad categories. If someone's a expanding their business, they may not have actually the right personnel in place to do that. If the business is in decline, you know, they're having trouble managing cash. That's usually a very major indicator. Even high growth companies have trouble managing cash. And the management performance issues, I've sort of added that as a segment, because it's a totally separate. It's a separate issue, but related to the other two as well.
Now, does that, I'm thinking of that, and I'm trying to separate that idea, or maybe I shouldn't here, but I'm thinking change management. So, I mean, there's a human side to every business, right? And managing those changes on the human side is a huge piece that businesses are having to contend with. But then I think management, and I think, okay, now we're talking leadership as well. Do you separate those two, or does that all kind of get moved into one arena?
That's a fantastic question. Because each one of those, it's all so interrelated. I'm dealing with a situation right now. The company had been through a tremendous challenges, and they're through it and doing pretty well. And the president of the company sort of realized that his major reports were not basically doing the job he wanted. And so I'm working with him in helping to set up some good benchmarks for performance and holding people accountable. These people have been there for quite a long time, so we're dealing with change management in the sense that he has to change as well as the staff. And also, helping put in some benchmarks to judge these people's performance. So you're not sort of, in a sense, pulling the rug out from underneath them. I do a fair amount of what I would call helping people deal with their management performance issues.
That makes sense. So when you go in, how often do you see this scenario where the management says, our people are a problem, and you go in and it's not a people problem, it's a management problem?
Well, I love that because many years ago it was a new client and it was an investment group and they're describing the problem and they said, okay, if you're going to be there Monday, I'll fire the controller Friday. And I said, oh, please don't do that, because I'm thinking, I'm not really sure who's wrong here. And so generally there's a certain responsibility on both parts, management and the staff. Obviously, I'm thinking about this, situation, any of these situations, the management hired these people. So that's the first issue, good hiring skills, defining the job, defining the responsibilities. And I also find another thing that people don't want to do is being candid with their performance. I worked with someone not too long ago who, trying to be confidential here, basically wanted some of the staff fired, wanted them to leave the company. And this management team was pretty tough people, and I was shocked that they were having difficulty doing it. And then I realized there was really also a great deal of loyalty there, that, the company had grown over the years and they had kept this person on, sort of in the sense of the beyond their ability to contribute. And ironically, the individual knew it as well. When I sort of tried to have a nice conversation about what would you want in life, they basically said, pay me out, give me a package. I said, I can do that. I'll help you. So it was a win-win for everybody. And it's funny, that situation needed an outsider to be the negotiator.
Yeah. And, I find that, when you're in it, it's hard to see, much beyond the perspective of what you have and when somebody else can come in. Now, you mentioned being candid about performance, and that's a crucial issue. I mean, we see it all the time, in both in real life and we'll call it TV drama. I was watching a show. I love Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, for example, mm-hmm. right? Because I love the way he just goes in and he helps people kind of break down what's happening in their business. And saw an episode the other day where the owner, the chef, really had just lost that perspective. He, in his mind, he was telling Gordon, hey, I am giving it all. I am trying. I am pouring my soul into this restaurant. And Gordon was looking at the result and just going, no, you're not. How do you find yourself dealing with those types of conversations in a manner that gets people to take action, to be candid, to make change, but yet not blow them out of the water? I don't think the crushing approach works either, right?
No, and that's also another great question, because the other thing, this person I'm delivering this message to is my client. So crushing them and blowing them out the water really won't work.
Right.
But there was this situation I'm thinking of right now where the individual wanted to hire me on a long-term basis to kind of go in and fix all the problems. And I said, that's not going to work. Because you're talking about the culture. The culture's there because of the person at the top, because of the people they hired. You know, you can't sort of bring somebody in, change everything, and they leave, and everything stays the same. So that's a situation where I'm working within the company in trying to change some of the expectations for performance, some of the ability to manage performance, and that really is as much directed with the CEO as it is with the individuals who are his management team.
Now, help us get a little more hands-on with the process here. So I'm thinking about what's happening in the organization, because I'm looking at this in two, I guess, front-end categories. I'm thinking coach and I'm thinking consultant, right? And we know there's that those words get interchanged a lot out there, but I see them as very different tactical approaches. One is going. You mentioned we want you to come in and fix all our problems. I see that more as a consultant role. We want you to come in, be very hands-on, be very active. You know, coach, on the other hand, is going to give a lot of guidance, a lot of direction, some higher strategy, et cetera, and feedback. But, for example, I've never seen a coach run onto the field and take a snap and head down for the end zone, right? So how do you work with the business?
Well, it really depends on the nature of the problem. I act as consultant in some arenas, particularly those that are, I would say, more financial. They have more financial peril. They're having difficulty managing cash flow. They're having difficulty having financial control of their business. Certainly, that's much more hands-on. I have a situation I'm thinking of right now, might be a better example, where it was like an outsourced CFO position, which is not something I really kind of exactly pursue. But it was a good referral. It was some people who were important contacts for me. And it was supposed to be a short period of time. Well, I got in there, and it was not anything that was represented to me. And no one was lying to me. They didn't understand the nature of the problem. So in that situation, it was purely roll-up-the-sleeve consultant. I would say a bit of coaching or something in the background, because the other thing was I had to bring management and the investor group sort of out of the denial stage that they were in, you right. know. I mean, really, they said everything's fine. We have, you know, we're making money, we're making money with positive cash flow. We have a good loan. None of that was the case.
We don't even know why you're here.
Yeah, you know, it was like, we just need you for a few weeks to take care of a couple of small problems we have, you know. And, you know, so it's a matter of, again, I customize my work to the problem. I'll give you another example. This is sort of a growth situation. There's an institution in the country that is looking to expand its focus, and I'm being vague for a reason. It's confidential, and they've asked me to do some of the work on that. Well, it's highly confidential. It's that's very hands-on, but it's also coaching and consulting, because of the nature of the expansion, and would include investigating in many other, let's say, areas. It's a due diligence in a sense, and so I'm kind of suggesting where I see the risk that needs to be drilled down into a deeper level.
Now, when you go into a company, do you have your own methodology? Like, do you have kind of a, like, this is the way that I believe business should run, and this is the business structure, and these are kind of the rules that we need to play by? Or do you go into a company and do you figure out what's going on inside of the company and formulate a plan that fits their unique need and or culture?
No, I don't have a formula basis. And I think it has to fit their unique business situation and in their culture. And I think culture is the overriding aspect of every business. People may not want to always acknowledge that, but the culture comes from the top, and you cannot deny that culture. And so you really have to operate in that environment. And hopefully where the culture needs to be changed, you can influence that as well. But no, it's based on the situation and the people and the business environment. That's my approach every time.
Well, that's such a great thing to hear for me personally from anyone in the coaching consulting environment world. I mean, obviously that's my theme. I believe firmly in that there's not a right and wrong. There's what works and what doesn't work. And while I believe there's universal principles, I think it's a tough sell to go in and say, you know, here's the methodology, here's the right way to do it. And, you know, hearing someone from a financial position take the stand that, no, I go in to figure out the situation, that's a pretty bold step. I mean, how did you come about that model? I mean, coming from corporate world, right, where there probably is more of a structure that's thought of as the way to do things, you know, because they're copying each other and things of that nature. How did you develop kind of your own methodology for working in the entrepreneurial business?
Well, I started out my career actually in entrepreneurial services in a large public accounting firm. And, you know, saw a lot of businesses. And personally, I think that's sort of the foundation of my, you know, skill sets. Because every business is different. Even if they're in the same industry, they're dramatically different. And then from there, I went into, I had a client maybe that sort of offered you quit and refuse, CFO of a, you know, a good-sized company at that time. And, you know, in that job, I learned that's where the auditor does not know everything. So that in itself was an education. Here, I've been working with this company for many, many years, had visited with the parent company, knew, you know, felt like, you know, you knew everything about it. And, you know, once I got in there, I learned some very critical things that the auditor did not know. I always say that's the job where I sort of earned my financial stripes. I was pretty young, and, you know, I instituted a lot of controls and procedures. The thing had grown too fast, and I wanted to see if I could fix everything I knew that was wrong. And I love telling this story, so I'm going to tell it now. You know, so we did a cash flow forecast along with our budget. You know, it's the first time they had anything like that. And I'm sitting there realizing that cash flow projected was basically for the end of the month, not for the middle of the month, which is, you know, you have to make payroll every week. And basically, we weren't going to have enough money. And I had to deal with that issue. That was real, you know, life experience. So that's why, you know, when I go into a company now and with my background and turnaround, I encourage everybody to do, you know, like a 13-week cash flow, because you've got to manage for the short term when one's talking about cash, as well as sort of long term. Capital requirements.
You know, I'm amazed how often business owners just don't know the financial numbers in their business. I mean, maybe they know something like top line revenue or things like that, but they really don't know the mechanics behind the numbers, cost of services, cost of delivery, value of their time, things like that. Are these some red flags that companies should recognize or business owners should recognize that would make them engage someone like you? Or how do they know they're in one of these situations that, you know, it's time to make that phone call?
I think business people, business owners certainly understand the things that affect their business. Obviously, they started the business. They know the drivers of the business. But I think what happens is that they're not financial people, okay? So they're not designing their financial reporting around that. And unfortunately, businesses start off small. They start out with young accountants who don't really understand those business drivers and don't understand how to generate financial reporting around those drivers. I totally believe in identifying the business drivers, designing the financial reporting around those drivers, making sure everybody in the organization understands it, and using that as a tool to run the business. I see this kind of over and over again. And, you know, earlier in this session, you asked about, you know, do I have anything, you know, that I do? And I do have one thing that I tend to do in every company I go in to consult with. I get their financial statements, and I just caught myself doing this years ago. I get their financial statements, and I'd start moving numbers around and start changing how it looked so that I could understand the business. So I'd identify some of the drivers and group things together. And before you knew it, I was doing it on every single company so that I could make some sense out of the financial reporting. And so often, again, financial reporting is, you know, certainly for tax purposes. Most small businesses, you know, it's primarily for tax purposes. But you need to look at it from the perspective of, you know, what's driving the business and not, you know, some kind of generally accepted accounting approach. I designed some financials one time for it was really an investor group. And I tried to show them they had some costs that were pretty high. And, you know, let's call it included in the sale. And it wasn't being controlled. And so I grouped those costs and I took it off the top. I subtracted it from sales to show their real margin. And their reaction was, well, I've never seen that done before. And I'm going, this is effectively what you're doing. You're giving this away, these costs. So when you look at your margin, don't fool yourself into thinking your margin's higher. It wasn't GAAP. It wasn't tax reporting. It was the essence of the business. And that's what you've got to get down to so that people can understand, again, the financial impact of the decisions they're making. And I think of another business. It grew real fast. And they were out of cash. And they didn't understand why. And I had to drill down into understanding the business to understand why they were out of cash. And as I did it, had to effectively train those people to manage for that. It was an unusual situation where they got paid basically in advance for the services they rendered and then hadn't rendered the services because they were growing so fast they used that money in operating capital. But literally, because of the complexity of the business, it took a lot of drilling down to understand that and had to train everybody from the president on down. And actually then suggested as an outcome of that work that they restructure their financial reporting into three different segments and develop some transfer pricing between them. And when I suggested this to the president, he said, you know, if we do that, everybody's going to know what's going on, which is the whole point. So, you can use your financials as a great tool, or, you know, it can be a scorecard at the end of the year that tells you nothing.
Yeah, very true. So what types of businesses do you find that you're the best fit for? I mean, obviously you can cover a wide range here, but is there a sweet spot, a business out there size-wise or growth-wise, et cetera, that maybe is a good fit?
The business has to have, I would say, some substance behind it. You know, brand new, very small businesses, no. But I hesitate to put a number on it, sales of X, profits of Y, because it's much more the nature of the problem than it is the, the size of the business. I like to say that I've worked with businesses from 10 to 210 million and literally have. And it's much more the nature of the problem than it is the size of the business.
Can you give us a couple of those? I mean, maybe something about the nature of the problem. I'm trying to think of how would I know that it's time to pick up the phone and call you?
I would say cash flow problems, uncomfortable with your management team, or you see something wrong within the business or financially if you're like an investor, and you want to know more about it, and you don't, and you feel like you need an outsider. I did a big project. I did a big project for basically some people who had a responsibility for a very large company in town. And they hired me to go in and drill down on some of the issues that they saw and to report back to them confidentially, directly first. Obviously not confidentially. Management knew about it, but they needed an outside eye. They see something wrong, and they're having trouble getting to the bottom of it. That can be an owner. It could be an investor. It might be some other type of stakeholder, a bank or lender or something.
Yeah. Is it also something that, I mean, since we talked about the CPA and the limitation there, that, you know, if you find that you've got a situation where your CPA is just, you know, doing a lot of that compliance work, maybe that's a good time to reach out or to inquire those questions?
Well, certainly, you know, your CPA is a great resource for you. They know a lot about the business. But my experience is that many CPAs are wonderful technicians delivering a great deal of knowledge about income taxes or audit approaches, but they have not worked inside a business other than their own, their CPA firm. Whereas I've been, you know, CFO of about a $30 million apparel company, and then I've been controller of a $750 million apparel company on the New York Stock Exchange. So I think I bring a lot more what I call management reporting experience to the table than most CPAs.
So that's kind of my thought. So I'm thinking if not only the business owner could be looking at this, but the CPA might be looking at this. If you're a CPA of a company out there, you're doing their work and you realize the scope that you're working within and the experience that you're working with them, but you know there may be something going on. It might be good to reach out and build a relationship with someone like yourself as well, right?
Exactly, because a lot of times CPAs, again, have their their business is revolving around a lot of this sort of compliance type reporting. And additionally, if it's an audit client, they really cannot perform management type services.
Gotcha.
So they really need to reach out.
So if you had some advice to someone listening, business owner or someone on a management team, especially let's go management team especially, if you had to give them some type of advice based on your years of experience and just what you're seeing out there, what would that be?
I would say that to identify the business drivers in the company, develop your financial reporting around those drivers, monitor those closely, constantly question those, and manage and forecast based on those drivers.
And if you don't know how to do that, then it's time to reach out to someone. And so if they reach out to you, how do they go about getting in touch with you?
You can visit my website, www.corpfinsolve.com. There's a lot of information about me, and there's a contact us page, or you can reach me at dpauli@corpfinsolve.com. I'm on LinkedIn. My cell is 404-625-1348.
And your sign is what? Capricorn, Sagittarius, long walks. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
We were giving a lot of stuff. I just figured let's get it all while we're here. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Deborah, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was a real pleasure and some refreshing perspective, especially when it comes to talking finances and financials. I think oftentimes we can get caught in the rut and in the trap of the reporting mechanism and not so much in the strategy of the numbers, and it's hugely important. So thank you again for sharing that with our listeners today.
Thank you, Andy. I think you're providing your listeners a great service.
Yeah, do you hear that, everybody? I'm providing you a great service out there. So tune in each and every time we have an episode of Renegade Radio so you can learn more about how to create some success in your business by stepping outside of some of these conventional and traditional norms. I have been your host, Andy Lowe, brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. And remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.